This is episode 150 of UFO Encounters. In this episode, I'm reading from Kevin Randall's book, UFO Sightings and Alien Visitations, Facts and Falsehoods. When I have guests on my podcast, I read their books to work out questions for the episodes. When reading these books, I always find such amazing information that never makes it into the podcast, and here I get a chance to give you a peek into the book. I've put a link to the book in the show notes, and I did seek permission to record this extract, and the author kindly said yes. I'm going to be reading from a chapter titled Bodies, Crashes, Retrievals, and this is a section titled Arizona in 1953, and this is what Kevin has written. Many know that I investigated the alleged crash reported by Arthur Stansel near Kingman, Arizona in 1953. I focused on that specific crash retrieval, ignoring rumours of others. However, according to some researchers and some of the witness testimony, focusing on Kingman does not provide a proper look at what was happening in Arizona in 1953. Among those cases is one that Stringfield reported in the UFO Crash Retrieval Syndrome, Status Report 2, New Sources, New Data of January 1980. He wrote that he had spoken to a first-hand source, though Stringfield did not identify that source other than to say that he had served as a warrant officer in the Army and then in the Air National Guard until he left Ohio without leaving a forwarding address. An unidentified source in the world today is of little value. The man opened a conversation with Stringfield by saying, "I have seen the bodies." He then pointed to a map and added, "There's approximately where the saucer crashed. It was a desert area, but I don't know the exact location." He said it happened somewhere in northwestern Arizona, and as far as he could tell, the crash occurred in 1953. Stringfield wrote that this was his first encounter with a first-hand witness to what he would later term a crash retrieval, and that he impressed Stringfield as a sincere and no-nonsense character. Stringfield wrote, he recalled that he had stood just inside a hangar at a distance of about 12 feet, peering at five crates on a forklift. In his judgment, the crates appeared to be hastily constructed and were made of wood. In three of these, little humanoids appearing 4 feet tall were lying unshrouded on a fabric, which he explained prevented freezer burn from the dry ice packed beneath. As a number of air police stood silent guard nearby the crates, he managed to get a reasonably good but brief glimpse of the humanoid features. He recalls that their heads were hairless and narrow, and by human standards were disproportionately large, with skin that looked brown under the hangar lights above. The eyes seemed to be open, the mouth small, and the nose, if any, was indistinct. The arms were positioned down alongside their bodies, but the hands and feet, he said, were indistinct. When asked about their attire, he said they appeared to be wearing tight-fitting dark suits, and, because of the tight-fitting suits, there was one revealing feature, a surprising feature. One of the humanoids appeared to him to be female. He said, either one of the aliens had an exceedingly muscular chest, or the bumps were a female's breasts. Later he learned from one of the crew members, with whom he had bunked at the barracks, that the body of the aliens was believed to be that of a female. The informant also heard from the crew member that one of the entities was still alive aboard the craft when the US military team arrived. Attempts were made to save its life with oxygen, but they were unsuccessful. In the Roswell case, there have been rumours that one of the alien beings had survived. In this 1953 case in Arizona, the witness said that he had heard from other crew members, meaning those who had recovered the craft, that one had survived. They tried to save its life by giving it oxygen, but were unable to do so. It might have been that the oxygen was toxic to the alien being. This might be the first of three reported cases in Arizona, as mentioned by Stringfield's source, who appeared to support the Kingman crash, which follows in a separate chapter. This could be a small corroboration for that source by providing some hints of the second crash, which I've placed first because all we had was a year and not a day or month. The second of those crashes was in April 1953. According to Stringfield, he talked to a source named Charles Wilhelm, who said a man identified as Air Force Major Daly told him about a crashed UFO. The story was that he had been flown to an unknown location, but said it was hot and sandy. He had been blindfolded and then driven to a base of operations about 30 minutes away. When he arrived, the blindfold was removed. Back outside, he saw a silvery craft that was 25 to 30 feet in diameter. He was allowed to enter the craft, and while he saw no occupants, he said the entrance to the craft was only 4 to 5 feet high and was 2 to 3 feet wide. This is somewhat suggestive of a flight crew that is smaller than the average human. Although it is possible that the crash wasn't even in Arizona, there is some evidence that it was. Stringfield reported that a letter dated April 8, 1964, had been sent to the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, NICAP, the headquarters in Washington, D.C. According to the letter, "Here at school, Bob Jones University, is an instructor who during the Korean conflict was an adjutant to an Army Air Corps general at one of our proving grounds. I got the following from him. In 1953, a flying saucer crash-landed near the proving grounds. Air Force personnel immediately rushed to the area and found the saucer, unharmed and unoccupied, with doors open. Upon searching the surrounding area, they came upon two bodies of the saucer's four occupants, all dead. Two officials were shown the bodies of the four occupants of the ship, which were described as 3 to 4 feet tall, hairless, and otherwise quite human in appearance. An autopsy had been performed on one of them to determine the cause of death. No cause for their deaths was ever found. Also at this time, they were shown three saucers which the Air Force has. He described them as ovoid, with a length of 25 feet and a width of 13 feet. They were shown the interior as well, and there were no visible means of control, no visible means of propulsion. He told me that since that time, the Air Force has been working intensely, though unsuccessfully, at trying to discover the means of propulsion. Dick Hall, who was involved in UFO research for most of his life and held responsible positions in both NICAP and the Fund for UFO Research, said that he had met a lieutenant colonel who said he knew more about this case. According to Hall, the colonel said he had seen the bodies of four alien creatures at Langley Air Force Base from a crash near White Sounds Missile Range in New Mexico. Hall never revealed the name of the lieutenant colonel, but provided additional details. The information collected by several different UFO researchers lined up as far as time frame, location, and descriptions of the craft and bodies. This argues for an event in the desert southwest, but they are not necessarily different events. This might be a single event told by those who had limited access to the craft and bodies and other information. Independent corroboration. Although the history of crash retrievals included descriptions of the flight crew, most of the top UFO researchers avoided stories of crashed saucers. This goes back to the original tale of the UFO crash near Aztec, New Mexico, which was debunked almost as soon as the story appeared. The Aztec case appeared in Frank Scully's 1950 book, Behind the Flying Saucers. The story was that the object had crashed near the tiny New Mexico town of Aztec in March 1948. The craft and the bodies of the flight crew were recovered by the military. In the original story, the flight crew was described as being dressed in 1890s-style earth clothing and having perfect teeth and brown skin, which might have been the result of their exposure to Earth's atmosphere. I always wondered about the clothing from the 1890s. Seemed a little strange to me. J.P. Kahn invested the case for true, meeting with the primary sources, and was allowed to examine several small pieces of metal that were said to have come from the wrecked saucer. Analysis proved the metal was commonly found on Earth. Eventually, the two main witnesses were charged with fraud that had almost nothing to do with the story of the Aztec flying saucer crash. Of course, that didn't help with their credibility. Given the lack of evidence and credibility of the witnesses, nearly every UFO researcher wrote the story off as a hoax. This affected research into UFO crash retrievals for the next several decades. Almost every story of a crash saucer was rejected out of hand because of Khan's expose. This episode I was reading from Kevin Randall's book, UFO Sightings and Alien Visitations, Facts and Falsehoods. And if you want to buy the book, there is info and a link in the show notes. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.